Hi, welcome to iConnect 007's roundtable discussion, a case study on process optimization with Ko Young and Matrik. With me, I have Ivan Aduna. He is the global MES manager at Ko Young, and also Patrick Stimpert, the vice president of operations, and Doug Bevier, the senior manufacturing engineer at Matrik. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much, Nolan.
Doug, Pat, what's the specialty at Matrik?
We're a contract manufacturer. We have very few OEM products that we own ourselves. And so we have to be successful building other folks' components. We have a really cool niche here that we started in the underground mining business, and we have now grown that business and diversified that business to we're everything to flight, to NASA flight, to industrial, commercial, all of those different electronics can be built here. The business started with two gentlemen in a basement, and we have now grown it to, we're probably looking at about an $80 million company this next year.
Facility in Western Pennsylvania, any other facilities?
Yeah, we have one in Freeport, which is south of here. And then we also have an engineering location out by the Pittsburgh airport, which is in our wind turbine business. That's an international business for us.
Let's start at the very beginning here. Matrik was looking to solve some problems, to make things better. What were they and what was it like?
So it really kicked off that we installed the latest, greatest generation of Panasonic line, an upstep from where we were at with our original equipment. And we found out really, really quickly, you can build a lot of stuff and it's really great. And except for if something's wrong, you can build a lot of bad stuff really quick as well. So we said that wasn't going to work. And so then we started the continuous improvement project. And made sure that we didn't put ourselves in a position where I called it Mount Rework kept piling up. And we just wanted to make sure that wasn't going to happen and that we remained profitable, protected our margins, all the things you want to do where this ROI project came from.
Yeah, that is one of the challenges, isn't it? You can speed up your capacity, increase your capacity, speed up your lines. And if things go wrong, you just make a lot of bad work a lot faster. How did you tackle this? What was your approach?
Well, early on, we already had our post AOIs in place, or a few of them at that time, and a couple different versions as well. And then we felt we needed to get to one platform and not bring more sophistication into it and try to simplify that sophistication and try to get all of our class one, class two, class three calls the same across the organization, which was quite a challenge as we grew rapidly, like most contract manufacturers are today. That's where, I put a lot of pressure on Doug to basically, hey, we gotta fix this thing so we can't keep doing bad things. Luckily, I was Doug's brand new boss as well, so that made it even more fun. And we spent a lot of nights and a lot of weekends figuring out how we're going to make that Panasonic really go and start looking at how do we bid other business that we couldn't bid before because of this. And just for fun, the owner just got done spending $2 million. So that, that little piece was in there as well.
So at what point in this process did you decide to reach out to Ko Young?
Well, we had one of their first generation systems that we had prior to the Panasonic, and then we got our first inline post reflow AOI, and the software it covered a lot of the different components and assemblies that we were doing and doing a good job of it. So when we moved on and got newer platforms, better improved software and improved enhancements, offline and online capabilities, I mean, it was a no-brainer to continue on with the Ko Young line.
Ivan, were you involved in their outreach with regard to this this particular challenge?
So interestingly enough, at this moment, I was not completely involved in the whole process. And this is because I'm part of a, let's say, after sale process where, you know, once they have the machines in place, they have everything they need and they have all the, you know, the elements in order to run production. Now is where, you know, they start asking the interesting questions, which is, how can we achieve other things, right? How can we extract information, the valuable information that is stored on the machine so that we can do more things, right? Either to improve efficiency or some other items that they might want to tackle based on, you know, their current pain points. That's really when I get in. But at this stage, you know, once they set up everything with regards to the post reflow AOI and they started to identify what are the benefits of having a pre reflow AOI, it's where you know, things got interesting. And basically, which is, you know, reducing waste, scrap, and, you know, optimizing the line fully.
Yeah, the first year of me coming on board here was fairly interesting because in the contract manufacturing world and PCB placement and SMT placement lines, I was basically new to that industry, so nobody knew me. And we were in Chicago at the Panasonic facility, and because of their relationship, Ko Young and Panasonic's, there was a whole whiteboard drawing while everybody else was looking at fancy equipment and stuff. And I said, okay, I'm going to draw out an SMT line. And I just started asking questions. And the first thing was, hey, you know, you're getting 12 to 15% placement time. You guys are doing really good in the industry. And then in my mind, I'm like, what? Because, you know, you don't even get to play baseball if your average is that bad. So at the end of the day, it's like, we got to do something different. And so that led into a conversation down in San Diego. And I'm still convinced that Panasonic turned off the lights in that meeting instead of the power going off, because we had pulled Ko Young in at that time going, this is the direction we're going to go. We're going to increase the speed, and I need really, really good throughput. And our first pass yield needs to get in the high 90s somewhere for us to really maintain the margin we want and then go in and explore more rapid, faster moving PCB products, you know, PCB placement products that we couldn't bid before because of this new machinery. And that's kind of how all of that took place. And then from San Diego is where there was other meetings with Ko Young and Panasonic, and that's where we started, hey, what are we going to do next? And I'm going, okay, we got the post taken care of. Right. And then all I seen was a whole bunch of stuff leave the post. And they said, no, now we got to go do a visual because there's a deviation. The Ko Young can't pick this shadowing up or something can happen. And then I think I had some colorful words I used then. And Doug was part of that one.
Now, and I was present. Yes.
Yeah. We're going to handle this again. Okay. Well, that's fun. Because all I seen was margin erosion. Right. And this is coming out of the rapid manufacturing pace that I was prior to here. It was like, you know, the LED manufacturing world, we'd lose money if we started handling everything over and over and over again at 1 cent a widget and all the rest of it. So that was the next thing, is like, what do we do for a deviation? And that was probably the hardest thing for the industry to stomach and say, you're going to do what? I go, I don't want it to go through my post without me calling a deviation. So I don't have to document it on a piece of paper. I want to get it on the Ko Young software, and then I want to not have to handle it again. And then they said, well, Pat, you know, you got to make sure your rotations are good and all the rest of it. And I'm going, okay, so how do you do that? Especially in the world of you can't find employees again. And I said, okay, so sell me some more AOIs. And this time I'm doing it before the oven. And so that's where we came up with the pre-design. And then I believe Doug said, what, we're doing this, what? And so all of that took off. And that's where we really got a really good relationship with Ko Young. And they started saying yes to some things that were very important to this.
Yes, exactly. And that's really when, you know, I started to get involved in my team as well, where, you know, things got challenged, really. not only on the inspection side, as Patrick mentioned, you know, there were some really big challenges with the Shiny components and some other elements that, you know, we knew there were some gaps that we needed to fill up. And that, you know, coming with the potential of software, being able to resolve some of the things that they were trying to automate, basically. Because at the very end, they were, you know, spending a lot of time in manual process that were not necessarily adding any value to the process itself, right? Which is really one of the major issues that they were having. And now, you know, coming with very creative ways to fully automate the process, coming up with ideas that definitely we have not done in the past, you know, with any other manufacturer. So we definitely needed to get a little bit more creative and with our offering, the software, the flexibility that we can have. And that's really where, you know, the key for all these really started to ramp up, which is basically leveraging, you know, software in some of our tools, the pre-reflow concept, in order to, you know, maximize the throughput of the line.
So you really are touching on all of the three basic challenges, right? Faster, better, cheaper, more affordably, or more profitably is another way to put that. You certainly are touching on all of those in what you were trying to achieve there. Ivan, as from your perspective at Coyoung, how commonplace are these challenges for contract manufacturers?
We certainly have, you know, very, very big challenges with manufacturers, but I don't think, you know, every single manufacturer is extremely different. Even though they might, you know, build similar products, sometimes we will face different challenges just because of the way, you know, the maybe the line setup might play a factor. The whole mindset, right, of dealing with manufacturers, it can play a role. But in this case, I think they knew where exactly where to, you know, where the challenges were, and we basically use our, you know, our knowledge or common ideas that we know that we could use in order to address those. So here, you know, one of the interesting parts about Matrix is they were really focusing on, you know, optimizing and reducing costs. They knew that they have a lot of waste in certain areas, and they needed really to maximize the output of all this equipment. And that's really key when the, you know, manufacturers know that they can, when they want to get the most out of a tool, which in this case can be either, you know, from pick and place, from a pre-reflow, they can completely change the landscape of manufacturing line just by putting or asking the right questions as Patrick did, or, you know, putting the right mindset on into fully automating the whole process, reducing the time that they are spending in again, non-valuable areas.
One of the big things to elaborate on what Evan's talking about is okay, we went out and we made the investment on five lines, five post AOIs, and ended up right now with four pre-AOIs. So that is a 9-person operation to monitor those machines, make sure that I'm not sending anything forward or stopping these production lines. And they had a solution in place, real-time monitoring through their CaseMark Enterprise software, that now we have one person, that's their full-time job, is watching 9 systems simultaneously, making sure nothing is going off the rails. Where before we had 9 associates doing that, now we have one on each shift monitoring those potentials, communicating to the line, hey, we do have a problem, you got to stop, or no, this was just a true false call, or everything's a good board going forward. That was a huge second step that they had a solution for us to remain profitable.
And that is huge. You guys had piqued my interest a little bit earlier in this conversation about getting creative in coming up with solutions. What were some of the creative things that Matrix and Coyoung did together to put this into place?
And the integration of the real-time monitoring Again, the one person monitoring nine systems. We also, one of the exception reporting, which Patrick elaborated on, the customization that Ivan ended up creating for us, where we said, we know this part has a shadow every time coming through. We don't want it to be considered a false call and go into the bad sorter. We want to look at it before time and say, hey, we've accepted it prior going into the machine. And then now it comes out as a good board, known good board without that potential second touch and a second visual on the back end side. That was number two. And then, you know, we asked them to make us a customized job summary report that showed the quantity of the job, how many was ran on the job, and then what were the top defects from each job. These were all integrations that were outside the standard scope, but like we said, they're important to us, and that's the information that our quality department wanted in front of them.
And that's a very interesting point. Just to put a little bit more context into that, what Doc just mentioned. So you can just imagine, right? There's a lot of manufacturers out there that, you know, they have a specific idea of how machines should be operated, and you know how things should work and be input into systems. And you can imagine, for example, these kind of scenarios where we go in line and we see, you know, multiple people, multiple operators just, you know, entering information manually into systems, where we see a lot of potential into automating a whole process, you know, just by single clicks or just doing nothing really, you know, because we know all the potential that, you know, information can provide to them. So here we see, you know, a lot of manufacturers doing a lot of manual process that with software, with, you know, a lot of things that we know as experts on the topic, we know that we can provide more value with information and, you know, automated the whole process. So you can just imagine these reports, you know, being filled up manually by the operators on the line, now with the capability of the machines basically pushing that information directly into their systems. And now you, of course, remove the, you know, any potential problem with the data input, plus, you know, reducing the time that you spend into just inputting this information into their corresponding system. So there's a lot of things that, you know, little things that basically add up. And at the end, you get, you know, a lot of time that by automating, having one single person, now it allows you or enables you to implement that kind of solution, right?
Makes sense. Go ahead.
Yeah, for myself, you kind of pull back a little bit and you look at everything, and there were some really key things that I knew it was going to be successful. One, you know, I have a philosophy, you just don't waste time rearranging, you know, chairs on the sinking Titanic. You go fix a problem, right? And so we just kept fixing things. And then when he said, okay, we have the labor issue, right? Nobody's maintaining long-term labor right now. And the people coming in, everybody that's coming in, it's a full-on scale learning curve. And so expecting the same results from 10 years ago, 5 years ago in the industry, those just not, it doesn't exist anymore. And then as I learned, and I got, you know, I was blessed to have Doug and some really, really smart people in the industry work along my side. And I go, okay, we're just going to fix these things, and we're not going to anticipate that every operator every day is going to do everything correctly. So let's automate as much as we can and have a checks and balance kind of guardrails on everything we do, that we don't expose our operators to doing bad things, even though everybody's coming to work to do the right thing. It's just one rotation on a 15,000 reel, 15,000 parts on a reel. That's a lot of bad can happen quickly. And so I said, let's fix that. That's where the whole pre came from. And then I'm going, why do we have all these chairs around all these AOIs? Because the human eye cannot do it, and the optics needs to get dialed in and make it do its thing. And so if you walk out on our manufacturing floor, it isn't because I'm mean. We have no need for those chairs to be around the AOIs anymore unless you're sitting there programming. We don't have people in front of our AOIs any longer.
Are you at a place where you can measure the changes to your operations? Can you quantify the optimization you've received out of this?
Yeah, so we when we started 6 years ago, 6.5 years ago, we moved our cost of good labor by 40% improvements, actually 46.5% when it was all measured. So we took 46% of the labor out of the SMT throughput version, right? Which was really, really good, because that's also when everybody was struggling getting labor, we could use that labor elsewhere. Start teaching them to hand solder, start doing class three hand soldering. So that was very important for us to be where we're at. And today we're still maintaining that, and we continue to improve on our cost of goods of labor. So I was very pleased with that. And then our first pass yield, when we really were to quantify it and we got the really good data out of Koyung, we moved from roughly 76, 75% first pass yield. Once the pre's were in place and the posts were dialed in and all of the rest of the stuff we had talked about, we moved right away to about a 97, 98% first pass yield.
That's a nice bump.
Yeah. And in the industry, I'm like, I don't know if other people aren't doing these things. They're basically whistling through the graveyard. And, you know, that's where you have the out-of-box failures and the customer cars and all these other things that just kind of dwell on and really the erode margin. And at the end of the day, you know, if it doesn't get out the door here and all of our optics do what they're supposed to do and our quality checks and balances are in there, we get very, very few returned out-of-box failures coming back to us. And that's where I feel this team has done just a fantastic job. I mean, I am so happy to be around these really smart people. It's just made me feel younger. I feel better that, you know, my cost or my continuous improvement flame keeps burning higher and higher, because I just love to do that kind of stuff. And so I'm really pleased in what we accomplished here.
Did you achieve all of your objectives that you started with?
Well, I'm a continuous improvement person, so no. Now, Ivan's still got some work for us to do, because I need to push some more optics on some other equipment, and there's some other things that we need to really, really understand. And then there's some other manufacturing ideas that we have that we're going to try and push Koyung even further. We just need to.
Ivan, I want to circle back to you, because there was quite a bit of discussion about customizing and integrating the Koyung equipment into their processes at Matrix. How common is that?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's more common than you will think. A lot of people will think that being SMT being so standardized nowadays, with, you know, so many organizations trying to, you know, put out the standard for basically almost everything that it's been manufactured, the reality is completely different. You will find that a rough estimate, probably around 70% of manufacturers are not standardized. And that's now because there's a big bump on, you know, some of the manufacturers now standardizing some of their processes and some of their standard outputs for many different areas. But the reality is that most of the manufacturing lines are highly customized. And that's okay. The reality is that there's, you know, so many different things out there that you can possibly imagine. So each and every single scenario might be handled differently, but there's always, I always say that there's always a space for standardization. And with this, actually, with Matrix, we basically try to do this, try to standardize the way that we report all the information. And at the very end, there's, you know, many things that you can achieve that. And that's the beauty of it, especially with regards to software customization. There's a lot that we can do. However, here's the, I believe, the key thing that we were able to achieve with Matrix, which is not every single supplier, vendor, manufacturer is able to adapt to those highly customizable systems. And that's really where our team, right, in the data side, really plays a big role, where manufacturers, really get the surprise of, oh, can you do that? Can you do that, right? This and that, can we customize this? Or can we, maybe adapt to what we already have instead of trying to always push for, you know, a solution that may work for someone, but not necessarily may work for everybody. So here's one of the key things, I think, with Koyong is that we are able to deliver and deliver it fast, whether it's any sort of standard or customized solution. We are prepared to, you know, to adapt to our customer needs.
Speaking of customer needs, Patrick, Doug, did you find that your relationship with your customers has changed now that you have these added efficiencies?
What we've set up here today, the floor, the manufacturing floor sells itself right now. Which that's a big statement in the industry. Where their quality people or manufacturing engineers from other OEMs show up here and then they want us to do some PCB work for them. It is really fun taking those around to the building here. And we have some really cool statements we'd love to use. And it's kind of funny because we're out here in the middle of nowhere in Western Pennsylvania. So we call it our own Silicon Valley of Western PA. And when you drive up to this, you have to go basically past farms to get to this place. And we catch a lot of very sophisticated OEM customers off guard that we're just trying to check the boxes of, okay, I got to find a manufacturer in the United States. I'm going to go visit 3-4 of them. We catch them off guard of how much we've pushed our technology and how much further we're willing to push our technology. And it's a lot, like I said, it's a lot of fun doing tours now because it's to actually show them the war room concept and one person making all the calls and going, yep, our next step is we want to, across all the facilities, standardize class 3 across all the facilities, as long as it's not a class 3++ and there's some hand soldering or whatever goes with that, but a class 2, a class 1, all that needs to be standardized so our sales people can sell at all of our facilities, not just this one. So that all that stuff has been really fun to be part of.
What have you learned about your business through all of this?
Oh, there's some crazy people in this industry. No, it's been fun working with the premier vendors, the Panasonics, the Micronics, the Jukies, the Koyong, and Doug has been sitting in this room and he can testify over and over again. The meetings generally start out a little weird because I'm saying this is what we're going to do. And I will get the industry standard.
Can't do that.
Can't do that. I mean, nobody does that. What are you doing? And so that has been very interesting to see somebody that's an outsider to the business, basically. I think we have fundamentally changed the OEM, or not the OEM, but the contract manufacturing world for the better. And we are now in a position, and this is a very bold statement, I can compete offshore now. I can outperform offshore if I have to. And that is a pretty bold statement.
That is very bold and leads into my final question for you. What advice would you give other contract manufacturers here in the U.S. based on what you've just learned from this project?
Don't listen to anything we just said.
Yeah, we don't like our competitors.
We don't like our competitors. We want them to come to Automatrix.
So with that aside, be careful about the continuous improvement people you put in your building. Because a true norther may not be flexible enough to really take on big, big challenges like this. And you know, I love those true northers to death, right? But the one thing that we're extremely, at least I was very happy when I was around this team, is, and I have a quality person that understands we have to make money. And I have manufacturing engineers understand we have to make money at the same time. Right? I have vendors, the Koyong, all the rest of them, that they know we have to make money. And so we have always prided ourselves and never, ever, ever being confused with a nonprofit. Right? So because, you know, it's about priding or, you know, giving a prideful job to somebody and employing all the local people here we can and continue to grow the business. And so if you're in a contract manufacturer and you're worried about competing offshore, you've got to get to automation. You just have to go, and you can outperform them, you know, with the tariffs going like they are and the freight instabilities and the costing of freight and the fuel and all the other stuff that's happening. You should be able to compete on offshore right now and not feel bad about that price.
Especially with the extra value that goes along with that.
Correct.
Gentlemen, thank you for taking the time to talk with us to describe your experiences. Appreciate it very much. Patrick Stimper, Doug Bevier, Ivan Aduna, appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nolan.